Blog Talk Radio.
And this is Scout Smith with Down South and Dirty with Scout Smith. Today we will have a special guest, Doug Craig of the Libertarian Party of Georgia. We will be talking today about low voter turnout, and we'll also be talking in the second segment about the VA flap and General Sinseki's resignation. I would like to introduce you at this time, Doug Craig.
Well, thank you, Mr. Scott. I appreciate you inviting me on. I'm really looking forward to the talking a little bit about the voter turnout and a little bit about the VA issues. I know we're both actually in the past been heavily involved in both of those, so it's, I'm really looking forward to kind of hashing those two issues out.
So, as we get into this, we know it's about Tuesday, on the 20th of May, we had a primary turnout election. And the turnout was very low.
Yes, Scott, the number actually quite.
So, what do you think about that?
I was a little amazed at 18.7. I mean, that is very low. You know, I think our normal range is about 25 to 30. But what's happened is, you know, there were very few candidates that got people excited. I mean, I think the Democrats actually had the more exciting candidates. Some of the Nuns and the Carter, I thought, was a little bit more exciting than what they've been putting up there. But the Republicans, generally speaking, had a horrible field. I mean, who gets excited about Deal? I mean, that's just not someone I think makes me wake up at night, you know, all excited. Or even Kingston. I mean, those two folks there are just recycled politicians that, you know, give us the same thing we've been seeing for 20 years.
Yeah, I had the same feeling also, me being a Democrat, and I was way more excited about our field than I was about the Republican field. But 18.4% turnout, I mean, that less than a quarter of the people in Georgia are getting a chance to pick who the nominee for their party was. You know, it's indicative of the apathy, I think, that we have in America today. And I specifically wanted to talk to you today because you're a third party, you're chairman of a third party.
Yes, sir.
And a lot of people are saying that in Georgia we have a lot more independents than we do Democrats and Republicans. So what's your take on that?
Well, you know, most people don't realize that we have some of the worst laws in the state of Georgia for getting on the ballot. It's almost easier to get on the ballot in Soviet Georgia than the state of Georgia's third-party candidate. We have not seen a third-party candidate since 1943 for U.S. House in Georgia. It is by far the worst state next to Kentucky by 50 years. The next worst state had a third party in 1993. So you imagine how bad it is here in Georgia. So when you got 50-60% of the people starting to consider themselves independent and we're not allowed on the ballot, why would we go vote in the primary? Sometimes a guy like me will see one or two candidates, or you'll have a personal friend running, so you go run. But if you don't know any of the candidates and you're a Libertarian or you're a Green Party or a Constitution Party, why would you go vote for a Kingston? Why in the world would you get excited to show up at the polls and go to a GOP primary or a Democrat primary if you're actually belong to the Green Party or the Libertarian Party?
That's a wonderful point you make there, because I know I have friends who are Green Party and I have friends who are in the Democratic Socialist Party, and they, you know, have to make a choice whether or not, okay, I'm going to actually pick up a Democratic ballot this year. And I have friends who are self-proclaimed Libertarians, but are members of the GOP because they feel like that's the only way they're going to get any access to the ballot or even get a voice. So what do you think we would need to do here in Georgia to be able to increase that voter turnout through third parties or the alternative parties?
Well, believe it or not, my view is actually even a little different. I actually think that we ought to have convention instead of primaries. I actually think the Democrats in each county, or however they want to break it down, and same thing with the GOP, and actually they should nominate their people privately at their own convention. That way, if you're a Democrat, you're welcome to show up at the convention. You can help. You get to meet the candidate. You'll get to hear him speak, and you nominate it. Currently, right now, the taxpayers are paying for the parties to pick their candidate, which in reality, the candidate should pick, and then the state should only pay for the general election, where we're picking the actual general candidate, not a primary candidate. If that wasn't the option and we had to go a different route, I would like to see the primaries open. It'd be very, very easy for anyone to be on the ballot in the primary. Scott, when me and you go to Kroger to buy a cereal and there's 42 choices, you don't freak out. You grab your Cocoa Pebbles or your Frosted Flakes, you put it in the buggy, and you go home. When there's 42 choices at the cereal aisle, you don't have a heart attack and freeze up. You know which one you want. You get it, you go home. And you love having the option. I mean, the free market is the best thing in the world. The Republicans love it, unless it comes to candidates. Then they want to limit the amount of people who can be on the ballot.
Well, you know, we had that same issue in the Democratic primary, and a lot of people, there was a lot of flack about it, that we had an anointing, basically, and, you know, where the National Party basically picked our nominee before we even had a primary. Now, and that, you know, that's being in full disclosure, I worked for one of those other candidates, Dr. Rad. And there was a lot of flap that I heard from rank-and-file Democrats about the fact that we did not allow the primary process to take place like we want to, but at the same time, 85% of those 18%, well, how many of it was on the Democratic side that voted, still picked Michelle Nunn. So, a lot of people, I think, on the independent side feel like, well, regardless of which party they join, that the party is going to get their choice anyway. But it's basically apathy that I feel like that drives, you know, the voter that say, hey, I don't have a voice, I don't have a choice, so I'm just going to vote whatever the way they tell me to vote. And it's sad that in America today that we are at this point.
Well, you know, you're talking about 18.7%. Just think, that's how many people that were registered to vote. Think about the other half of the people over 18 that are not even registered. So we've got 4 or 5% of America picking who's going to be in charge of making our laws, enforcing our laws, who's going to help, you know, lead the three different branches of government. I mean, it is amazing. And then you see it, all these people talk about how bad the incumbents are. What do we have, 6 or 7 state house or state senate incumbents lose, and that was it? And I think what something like 60% of them after the primary are not going to have a person against them in the general election, and they're going to make it where the Green Party or the Democrat Socialists cannot be in the general. So at this point, basically, we've almost selected 60 or 70% of our candidates with 4% of the population.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's just amazing. Go ahead.
Oh, it just amazes me. Then people just get this worked up, and then they over and over. I made a statement the other day. It's kind of like public schools. Everybody thinks their school in their neighborhood is the best one in the state of Georgia. It's that way with politicians. For some reason, you think your U.S. House rep or your state House rep or your state Senate rep is not the problem. It's the guy over there on the liberal side or the conservative side that's messing everything up. The fact is, it's not. It's an issue with how they get elected, how they go up there. Sam Moore and Charles Gregory are two of the examples where their own party did not like the way they were doing things and came after them. They were not doing it the way they were told they had to do it. They were putting bills up the first year, and they said, that's not the way it works, guys. And what we're going to do is we're going to come after you and make sure you don't win because we like the status quo. And they went after some of their new guys, some of what we call the Liberty people, and made sure they lost. So why would you want to go and get involved with that if you're an independent thinker when the party is going to come after you full force with hundreds of thousands of dollars to embarrass you and make sure that you lose?
You know, you make some valid points there. But, you know, they tell us this is how the system operates. I mean, we all talk about how money, big money, corporations control the electoral process. We talk about it, but at the same time, we still feed this beast with more money, and we continue to, like you said, continue to vote these people back into office. Irregardless of, you know, what we say our ideologies are when it comes to campaign finance, which, I think, you know, has driven us toward these low voter turnouts. People just don't care anymore because they don't think they have a voice. And it doesn't matter if you're a liberal or a progressive or a conservative or Tea Party, libertarian. I think we all are kind of in this feeling that America is no longer in, we're no longer in control of our own country. And we all need to be trying to take our country back. But all of us have a different way of what we're thinking, how it needs to be done.
Well, you know, it's funny you're talking about money. The I was watching some of these races, and I saw that the Chambers of Commerce had got involved. So what you've got is you've got Coca-Cola, Delta, and Home Depot underwriting these candidates. You had one up in Cobb County who did not want to see the government assisting in a Braves move. They thought that the Braves should move up there, but it should be totally based on their own financial deal, not with the county helping. The Chamber of Commerce came out against that candidate, spent big money, was taking money from Home Depot, Coca-Cola, because they wanted the county to be financially backing the Braves. And you can't compete with that. If you're Doug Craig or Scout Smith, we don't make enough money to be able to compete with a worldwide Coca-Cola getting involved with a local campaign. And if you went to the convention system, guess what? Coca-Cola don't get to show up at your city meeting where you're picking who's going to be it. They don't get to buy a million ads that makes a difference if we're doing it at a convention. And I think with a convention-style nomination process, the local activists get to be more involved in who gets to be selected as our candidates. And I think at that point, we would actually get better candidates at that point.
Hold on. I got a caller sitting here. We're going to take a call right quick. Hold on 1 second. Go ahead, caller.
Hi. Hi, Scout. This is Stacy Hopkins in Atlanta, and I want to congratulate you on your show, and I'm glad you're having this conversation. I agree with some points that both of you gentlemen have brought up, but I think the biggest problem, and full disclosure, I worked with Scout on Dr. Rad's campaign as well. Not only is it money in politics, but there's an enthusiasm gap. And that people are not, it doesn't matter what party you're with. If you don't have a candidate who can go out there and sell it and get people to get out of their seats and go to the polls, because I did canvassing this last election cycle, people don't even know who represents them. They would not know their representatives if they were standing in front of their face. That is a problem, and it is a problem. We saw what happened. One of the reasons why President Obama's campaign was such a thing of beauty, it was all of those elements. It was a perfect storm. But the first key to it, you had people who were dying to work on that campaign because they were inspired by that candidate. And until the parties, any party, gets a candidate who can get people out of their seats, and all of the other issues, you know, ballot access, yes, it is a problem, but that does not prevent any other party from getting on the ballot. It's a lot of work. It is a hell of a lot of work to get on the ballot in Georgia, but it's not impossible. But you can't do it if you don't have a candidate who gets people off of their seat. So I think there's work for the parties to do or the committees in finding really good candidates who can basically sell it and bring it out there and get people out there. And we did see that during the last race, but conditions that you guys brought up, we didn't get to see them. Dr. Radstein, Miles, Todd Robinson, all great candidates on the Democratic side, they had an unequal playing field. And Todd Robinson brought it up during the debates on WSB. They did the debate after early voting had closed. How many minds had changed after the debates were over? So it's a collusion of a lot of elements that really do give candidates, it's like being Sisyphus pushing that boulder uphill. It's a hard slog in Georgia, but it's not over. It's not something that can't be overcome, but you can't do anything without a candidate who can bring them out.
You know, Stacey, I totally agree with you on that because, you know, we got to, a lot of candidates think they can go out there and put ads on television. They can go visit a couple of meetings. They think, but at the same time, they don't understand why it is important to build a good ground game, to be able to get people out in the streets, knocking on doors, getting people out there ready to talk to the voters. And, you know, and it's difficult to get that, and it's resource intensive, But I don't think a lot of candidates or campaigns understand the intensity that it takes on building a base. People want to jump in the race at 2 and 3 weeks just before qualifying or the day of qualifying. And, you know, a lot of people squeak by in primaries, but they still don't go over and build that base for the general election, which still doesn't have a great turnout record here in Georgia.
Right. So then what you end up, this is not a, elections in Georgia, they're not by the people who come out. It's who doesn't come out. That's how you win. And
right,
that's the
right.
problem with democracy, you know. And this is why people, I can understand the apathy that people have. I've heard quite a bit of it. There were a lot of people who didn't even know there was an election going on. They didn't know what offices were being elected for. You know, there are some people, if it's not presidential, they don't bother to get engaged, and they don't understand that every single office from school board up impacts your neighborhood. And, you know, a lot of people, the first thing that comes out of their mouth when you say, you know, I'm out here canvassing for a candidate X, why should I vote for them? What are they going to do for me? And when you look around the political landscape, sometimes it's a very hard argument to make. You know, when we see, and this is on both sides, I'm being totally bipartisan, when you see candidates who say one thing to, they will say something to you in private and then get on the TV and say something totally different. You know, working on immigration issues, we made a couple of visits to Republican legislatures here in Georgia who said one thing behind closed doors and then they got out there in front of the press, and they're like, and all we heard was no, 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 no. So it gets a little frustrating, and it's very difficult for people and organizations to get out to vote. We keep hearing we got to get out to vote. We can only do so much, but that
right.
that element of getting those people out, it's got to be done, and it's very. I have to give props to the GOP side because they were. They were a little bit more democratic in their primary. It was a clown car as far as, you know, the amount, and but they had a lot of variations of candidates to choose from, and they pretty much stayed out of it. The Democratic side was pretty controlled, and you know, it. We tend to think of it being in the opposite paradigms, but it really wasn't, you know. Those who worked right. inside of it knew exactly what was going on. So I really hope that, you know, people will step up to run, those who have the passion, but when they do it, they need to think about it like they're starting a business. And they really have to think about all of the elements that go together. You just can't jump up and say, I want to run, and you don't have the resources, because it does take resources, and as you
right.
said, scout a ground game.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, Stacey, and I appreciate your comments. And as we continue on, maybe we can get you to come on the show at some point in time and talk about these issues more in depth.
Okay. Well, good luck with the show.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, Scouts, you know, one of the things she was talking about is people not getting worked up. You think about it. Two of the biggest candidates, one from each party, you know, the governor would not go to debate and Mrs. Nunn would not go to debate. And how do you get your base excited when your two biggest stars from each party are not showing up at these debates? You know,
yeah, you,
to
you,
me,
that's one of the arguments we had. That was one of the arguments
yes.
we had on the Democratic side, was that we wasn't having this vigorous debate, whereas the Republicans were. I mean, that was like 6, maybe 7 debates in which actually Dr. Rapp participated in 2 of them. And, I mean, to tell you the truth, only problem that our campaign really had was that we never really had a base. The pool from all that base was very small, and we did not do a very good job of building that base. That's the only thing, because we was, most of our people were the far left progressives, and you know, they make up a very small proportion of the Georgia Democratic base. We didn't, and then at the same time we had those people who belonged to those other parties. But you know, there was a great discussion we had on the low voter turnout, and I see now that I might have to make this show a little longer than with you, because some of these issues can get very in depth. So we're going to take a quick break just for a couple of seconds, and then we're going to switch over and start talking about the VA. Well, this is Scout Smith, and this is the Down South and Dirty with Scout Smith, and this, we have on the radio with us today Doug Craig, Libertarian Party Chairman for the state of Georgia. And in the last segment, we talked about low voter turnout. We have about 10 minutes left in the show, Mr. Chairman, and I want to get your thoughts on General Fonseca's resignation from the Veterans Administration today, last week.
Well, Scout, I'd like to start off, first of all, thanking you for your service. For folks who are listening, me and Scout both have done service time, so we've actually been involved with the VA when we were active duty. You know, I think it's just, you know, from my libertarian standpoint, I think part of the problem is big government. The amount that we're spending has skyrocketed, and which is, you can argue whether or not we should be, you know, spending more and more money, but the fact is we have spent more money in the last 10 years and getting less service. This problem is not new. It didn't happen when Obama got elected. This has been going on for years, that the vets are coming home and not getting proper treatment. We talked beforehand about going to something a little bit different where either smaller, where there's more hospitals, smaller branches, more branches. I would like to see even a possibility of us having them like a voucher system where they can go down to Southern General, Grady, you know, the hospital in Columbus. You know, a vet who's in his 70s should not be trying to travel from Moultrie, Georgia to Columbus or Moultrie, Georgia to Dublin, Georgia. You know, these folks should be able to go to a hospital closer to them, and that's some of the problems that we're having.
Well, you know, I guess this is where we're different because me being a Democrat, I can see where government can come in and you know, and be a force for change and positive change. I mean, we both agree that the VA is not the best of operating entities inside of our government. I've never been to the VA hospital since I've been out because of the simple fact that I knew just from listening to, like, my grandfather when he was alive talking about going to the VA and relatives that had to go to the VA and how long it took for them to be able to go in there and get done what they needed to get done. And these are problems that people having when I was a child before I even joined the service, much less they still have them today. And a lot of folks were calling for General Fonseca's head, but, you know, it was a problem that came before him. It's an indicative of a bureaucracy that needs to really be overhauled and people need to be held accountable. And, you know, I think pulling government less out of it, and it goes probably back to what we were talking about again in the last segment about the people that we sent to Washington not being able to do their job because they're so always cowering after some special interest money, that this system will never get fixed. So it really doesn't matter who jumps in and runs this organization because it's going to be the same people still there.
Yeah, it's going to be a struggle to make improvement. It's I think one of the things with the secretary resigning was he did what a good soldier normally does. He fell on the sword for the good of the commander. I don't think he was doing a bad job. I think what happened was he wanted to make sure that his commander-in-chief did not the brunt of this, and he did what most good soldiers and sailors would do and took one for the team. I think going forward, I think we're going to struggle to get the kind of quality service. I don't think I've ever told you this, Scout, but when I was in the Navy, I actually got ran over by a drunk driver and spent quite a while in the hospital when I was in the military. The mistakes that they made while I was in there led to me being, instead of just a few days, to being in there 3 weeks and losing about 50 pounds. And I saw some of the stuff that was going on there, and I was like, gosh, you know, this is just hard to believe. And I saw it again when my mother had work done when my father was in the military, and she lost the use of a couple of her fingers because of the poor quality. One of the things they were talking about in the VA is that doctors are using it as an intern program. New doctors are going to the VA, getting 2 or 3 years of experience, and then going to the higher paid jobs. So one of the problems we are having is that the doctors that work within the VA having an average work experience significantly shorter than almost any other hospital in the country. So we're getting the newer guys and the newer ladies, you know, who are still learning, and we need to change that. Our average doctor's work span should be the same in the VA as it is at the average hospital, and right now it's not.
Well, you know, the VA is, you know, is one of those institutions, and it's one of the younger branches of the government, and it's one of those institutions that we know we need to work on and that we really need to make sure that we hold not only the secretary of the VA responsible, or the president, but we also need to make sure that we hold those the bureaucrats accountable, those people who work there, those administrators who they are basically employees who will be there for 20 years. That basically the biggest problem that Shinseki said in one of the hearings, that people are gaming the system, trying to, you know, make numbers look good to get a bonus, and those type of things that are taking place. And, you know, one of the congressmen asked a very good question in one of the hearings was, why are these people not getting fired? And Shinseki looked over to his deputy secretary that was in there and looked at this guy and was like, okay, why are these people not getting fired? And the dude, all he could do was sit there and stammer and stutter. And it was a sad thing that you're sitting there in front of the United States Congress and they ask you, why are you not firing people for not doing their job? And you can't give a good answer.
Well, I think that is one of the problems. It is very, very difficult to get rid of somebody who struggles in the VA system, where, you know, if they're not, they could be competent, but also not do a great job, and it's hard to fire somebody when they go to work at the VA. I mean, you see that over and over, that they're going to get a warning, a letter, you know, no matter what they do, sometimes it's hard to get them fired. And so a lot of times, get employed there, they don't go somewhere else. They stay there, and they continue to do a bad job. And it would be nice to see if somebody is gaming the system or somebody's got a false list, those people ought to be prosecuted. We ought to send a message that this is not acceptable, because if you did this in the private sector to the vets, you would go to jail. If you work for a private hospital and you're using fraud against the vets, you would do jail time. And that same standard should be applied to people who work at the VA hospital. If they're using fraud and breaking the law, they should be prosecuted. And it would send a strong message for many years that this will not be tolerated.
Well, you know, that I feel like this is going to be one of those things that people are going to watch, you know, for now. We're going to wait for the new guys just come on. They're going to watch them for a little bit, and it's going to go away. And until another crop of veterans die again, then they'll pick it up back up. Because, I mean, the main thing is everybody wants it to go away. You don't see the Republicans now that they done got their head for some second. They done got their pain of blood. I don't think they're going to continue to chase it. The Democrats are not going to want to talk about it because it's an election year, and it's going to slowly go away. I mean, everybody's going to concentrate on a whole. Go ahead.
Scout, you know the libertarians have at least a great partial answer to how to handle this, don't you?
What is that?
Quit going to war.
I think that's something that Democrats could probably, a lot of Democrats, at least progressive Democrats, can agree on, is that we need to stop going to war. We spend billions of dollars every year, you know, supporting operations overseas, and we are so quick to want to cut those same benefits for those veterans when they come back. We will spend billions of dollars training them, and we'll spend all this time.
I think Bernie Sanders is one of those great people when it comes to that. That's one of the things he came out and said. He says, if you cannot afford to take care of these kids when they come home, do not send them to war. It is that simple. If you cannot afford to take care of a man who's had his leg blown off, then you don't send him to war. And that's the problem we make, is we don't mind spending $1 billion on an aircraft carrier, but God forbid we help these kids, you know, get taken care of once they're back home. I think somebody said if we cut our military spending by 85%, we would still have the biggest military in the world, even after cutting it by 85%.
Well, yeah, and I agree with you on that one. You spend a lot of money here at home and cut costs at the same time, and I think everybody will be happy with that. Well, Doug, I really appreciate you coming on, being my first guest today. I hope I can get you back, because it seems like a lot of issues that I know we could talk about. Again, thank you for coming on to Down South and Dirty with Scout Smith.
I truly enjoyed it. I appreciate it.
Well, everyone, this is the end of our show. I thank you for listening today, and tune in next Saturday at 1:30.